Glenn Phillips, you know him from Toad the Wet Sprocket. His album, There Is So Much More. Stone Throat, Glenn Phillips. Joni Mitchell from the Asylum albums, 72 to 75. Cold Blue Steel and Sweet Fire. That's the 2022 remaster. Nice. And Eleanor Underhill with Notifications from Navigate the Madness. That's kind of what we're doing here. And we're going to take it all the way back to the roots in just a minute.
You are tuned in to KBOO Portland, 90.7 on your FM dial.
K282BH, Philomer, on 104.3 FM.
And K220HR, Hood River, on 91.9 FM.
And streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Volunteer-powered community radio.
KBOO.
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 Have an old car taking up space? Donate it to KBOO. Your unused vehicle can become music to our ears, powering independent radio that amplifies diverse voices and community perspectives. It's easy and hassle-free. Either visit kboo.fm/cars or call 1-877-KBOO-123. You'll get a tax deduction and the satisfaction of supporting local independent media. Donate your car to KBOO Community Radio today and drive change in your community.
Journey through lush songs and soundscapes, teeming with life, during the Garden of the Heart. Each episode explores the ways that music carries our emotions. Explore the garden every second Friday of the month from 8 to 10 p.m. The Garden of the Heart is a bilingual program in English and Spanish that offers a mix of music that spans multiple genres, languages, and styles. The host is Zoe.
Hello, and welcome to Pathways, where you are invited to join me for a visit with leaders in personal development and cultural evolution. This is your host, Paul O'Brien. Exponential change not only promises rapid advances in science and technology, but also contains the seeds of its own demise. The more rapid the change, the greater the stress on the environment and on our nervous systems, for that matter. And what are the implications for the future of humanity, for our peace of mind? Ever-accelerating change also creates stress on the systems involved, personal, social, and planetary. Today's guest proposes there is no blame and presents a new story of our place in the cosmos. Our guest is Peter Russell, author of the new book, Forgiving Humanity, How the Most Innovative Species Becomes the Most Dangerous. Peter is the widely acclaimed author of The Global Brain and other pioneering works. He earned an honors degree in theoretical physics and psychology, as well as a master's degree in computer science at the University of Cambridge. He subsequently went to India, where he explored meditation and Eastern philosophy, and was one of the first people to introduce personal development programs to corporations in the 1970s. Hello, Peter, and welcome to the Pathways Show.
Hello, Paul. It's great to be back with you again. Looking forward to wherever we go with this.
It's always awesome to have somebody of your stature on the show. I really appreciate that. Okay, Forgiving Humanity. Oh my God, I get stuck on the first two words of the title. You know, it's sort of like, here you're describing how dangerous we are, but we need to be forgiven. We might as well just go straight to that point and have you explain what you mean by that.
Yes, I think, you know, we see so much that is going wrong with the world, with ourselves, whether looking at, you know, the environment, climate change, social unrest, lot of the economic system. Wherever we look, there's so much going wrong. And it's so easy to blame ourselves, whether it's blaming corporations, politicians, other people, whatever it is, other ethnic groups, or even just, you know, people in history. It's so easy to put the blame on somebody, some organization, some people. And what I'm suggesting is, ultimately, there is no blame for where we have got to. We'd have arrived at this situation whatever course we'd have taken in the past. It isn't like if we hadn't done wrong, or, you know, corporations hadn't done this, we'd all be living in utopia. No, no. This point we're coming to, this really, it's a collapse of the environment, in some ways a collapse of Western civilization, was inevitable sooner or later. And, you know, we're beginning to live through the beginning stages of it. So the no blame is forgiving is saying, okay, this is inevitable. We cannot blame individuals or organizations for it. So that, I feel, is a really important thing, to actually take back that blame, and to actually be more compassionate and understanding. And that's what I basically try to do in the book, by, you know, portraying the history of our evolution, the accelerating evolution. I see it's the acceleration that is actually underlying most of what's going wrong in one way or another.
Well, it's the acceleration of innovation. You know, we are the most innovative species that we know of, that's ever lived. You know, I mean, and you point out, it's a combination of a lot of things, but primarily technology, which is the ability to make tools. And I imagine our opposable thumb comes in handy. And the other one is the ability to communicate, the soft palate, the ability to create language and coordinate socially. And so what you are saying in the book, if I understand this correctly, is that we just have this like natural capacity for innovation that leverages those two things, at least those two things, and as well as our ability to collaborate. And, you know, they say that technology really took off after the agricultural revolution, because we're living in communities where there's a lot more cross-pollination of ideas. It's almost like it's in our DNA to innovate. And what the point I think you're making is that innovation has a mind of its own. Kind of like, makes me think about some of the things we hear about AI. It's just like, it's nothing can stop this. Nothing can stop the acceleration of innovation. And I think you're making that point, that to that extent, we can't go back. So it's kind of hopeless. There's this. There's a hopeless aspect to the idea that innovation is never going to stop, and it's driving us crazy, and it's tearing up the world.
Absolutely. Yes. 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 And in fact, yes, I see this positive feedback loop. The more we innovate, the better tools we create, the more creative we become, the faster things grow. And it didn't really begin with the agricultural revolution. I mean, tool making, for example, you know, we know the great apes make tools, lots of other animals make tools. But as you point out, it's when we began to speak and we had language, we could share our knowledge, we could so show each other how to make better tools, and that better tools allowed us to make other tools. And so, you know, we made agricultural instruments, and then we started making engineering, and then the industrial revolution. And each new advance made it easier to create more sophisticated advances, you know. And as you mentioned, here we are with AI, and that's just the latest in this trend of innovation breeding further innovation. And whenever you have that positive feedback loop of innovation or anything making it easier for the next stage, then you get exponential growth. That's why the population was growing exponentially. The more children that are born, the more parents there are, the more children that are born. So you get exponential growth. And so what I see is there's an exponential growth of technology, which is inevitable. And not just technology, but science, our understanding, it's inevitable. There's no way out of it.
And well, we have a hard time thinking in terms of exponential growth. Our mind doesn't really think like that. We were much more linear, or Newtonian, I guess you could say, than that. And so that sort of adds up to us feeling overwhelmed or confused or anxious because we just can't make sense of it. And is that one of the purposes of your book, in your mind, is to help people at least understand why they can't understand, or understand why they can't keep up, so that maybe they have a little more compassion for themselves and for others, for instance?
Partly, yes, partly. Because what I see is the we can't keep up with it. We're not going to be able to keep up with it. I mean, we think things are going so fast now, they're going to be going much, much faster with AI. You know, we've no idea where the world is going to be in 5 years' time. Things are moving so fast. So what I try to do in the book is actually to two things. One, to get people to a point of accepting this is what's happening, because I think we're so much in denial. In our minds, we can't really think about exponential change. If we think about the future, we think in terms of linear change, linear growth. I mean, classic example, which maybe for our age, may not be for younger people, that I use in the book is Star Trek. You know, that was set when it was written a couple of hundred years in the future, and they had computers that could talk, you know, and you could talk back to the computers.
What do you know?
What do you know? But the point is, you know, that has come so much faster. We don't know what computers we're doing in 5 years' time, 10 years' time, beyond any estimates, I think. So we cannot think in exponential terms. We're always thinking, if so much change has happened in the last 2 years, that'll happen the next 2 years. It won't. There'll be much more change. So it's really about coming to accept that is the first thing. Accepting this is how things are going to be.
Well,
go on.
When you talk about the accelerating rate of change and you talk about AI and it's how unimaginable of what AI's impact is going to be, it's already happening. You know, and there's been so many so much hand-wringing about AI and are we going to be able to control it? And, you know, what does it mean? And it's, you know, is it doomsday? Is it the end of humanity? Is AI going to start reproducing itself and eliminating humans? All of this, you know, scary projections that people are doing. But you know what? I feel like we're in such desperate straits. AI is our only hope. I'm actually optimistic about AI. But I mean, I just choose to be. I don't have any scientific argument other than the fact that we need solutions that the human brain doesn't seem to be capable of.
Yeah. I think AI, you know, is a two-edged sword, and you know, people jump on the dangers so easily, and there are dangers. I mean, what things you mentioned, who knows that these are possible dangers? I don't think they're as likely as some people like to say. On the other side, I mean, what we have is with AI, we can solve problems that we've never been able to solve before. And in science, I mean, it's pushing science and technology ahead way, way faster, speeded up growth in some areas that maybe 100,000 times. I mean, just, you know, for one example, which I think is quite well known, Google has a program called AlphaFold, which works out the structure of a protein. When you know it's chemical analysis, it's probably, you know, got a couple of hundred atoms in it. No one could work out how a protein folded up, which was really, really important for deducing how it works in the body, how it functions in amino acids, deriving new drugs, working out what's going wrong with an illness. People had to do it by hand. It would take, you know, maybe a team of people 2 or 3 years to work out the folding pattern of a particular protein. AI did 2 million proteins, you know, just like that. We've now known the folding structures, possible folding structures, nearly every protein. That is going to push medicine and that field so far ahead, so much faster. So that's just one idea. I mean, I could cite many others, but how it has dangers, but it's also opening up many opportunities. And yes, it could solve problems that today are impossible. We don't know.
You know, you describe exponential change as a curse. I heard this in another interview of you. And, you know, what does that imply for our future? Is some sort of unraveling? And I'm going to quote your book. It says, as the reality of the unraveling hits home, there will be widespread despair, depression, and distress. In this radically different news story, there is no long-term future ahead of us. Wow.
this is the sobering, very sobering conclusion. So the curse of exponential change, you know, is not, you know, where AI could lead us or anything like that. It's that exponential change itself puts stress on all the systems, puts stress on us. The faster things grow, change, the more we have to adapt, you know, got to get a new phone, new software. You know, there's always stress on us, but the stress on the environment. And so many of the problems we're facing, as I said earlier, come down to exponential change. For example, climate change is because of the exponential growth in our consumption of fossil fuels and many other things. They come back to the fact there's exponential change. And because that change is inevitable, then what I see is the cost of the change, or the curse, is it's also inevitable that along with the ever faster growing science and technology, there's going to be an ever faster growth in the collapse of the system. So, and this again, it comes back to there's no blame for what is happening. But when we begin to accept that, then we can see, well, first, I think two things happen. I know what it meant for me, and I get a lot of emails from people who read the book saying this. There was actually a sense of relief. It's like, you know, they knew something. It's like they were, in a way, resisting accepting this is inevitable. They're resisting accepting it. And the picture I paint is like, they say, whew, there's a relief. And now it's like, okay, now we can accept how things go. It's like accepting our own death. You know it's inevitable. We don't like to think about it, most of us. We try to avoid it. We don't go there. We think we're going to live forever. But accepting that, you know, our species is on this spiral going faster and faster into, I call it the center of a sort of evolutionary hurricane. And we may not be here in 100, 200 years time with accelerating change.
You know, for me, that idea doesn't bother me. The extinction of humanity idea doesn't bother me as much as the process might. Because, you know, if we had a nuclear holocaust, for instance, that could end human civilization, you know, fairly quickly. And, you know, okay, it'd be horrible, but at least it would be over. But this scenario that seems to be unfolding with climate change, with climate refugees, with I'm particularly depressed about climate change. It's kind of a slow moving, it's accelerating, but it's a developing problem that's going to, like you said, produce widespread despair and depression and distress, not to mention starvation and all kinds of other diseases and all kinds of other problems. Just witnessing that, just living in a world where everything's falling apart and where people are dying in the streets, that depresses the hell out of me. I would rather go fast than to go slow like that.
So, I'm probably not alone. And I mean, I know I hear a lot of psychologists, therapists these days, a lot of what they're dealing with their clients is not necessarily, you know, what's going wrong with their romantic relationship, but like their angst about the world. Right. And yes, I would add to that, not just, you know, the pain and suffering that's going to be happening, is already happening with people around the world, whether it's, you know, climate refugees or many other things, you know, the food crisis, but also what's happening to other species. And that fills me with incredible sadness. And I don't know how to process it when I think of all the species that have been here for so long and are so much of the part of this fabric of life are end becoming extinct, you know, because of this. It's just incredible sadness. But I think what we have to do with grief, whether it's grief for the pain of humanity, grief for what's happening to the planet, there's recognizable stages in grief that people go through. And the first is denial. When somebody dies, you know, the initial thing is, are they, you know, maybe we can bring them back, maybe we can resuscitate, whatever. There's denial. That's the first stage. And I think we're coming out of denial now. As a species, we're seeing We're rarely in it. You know, I think the UN said today, you know, it's going to be a hell, it's going to be climate hell, or was it yesterday? But anyway, so that's the first stage. The second stage is anger. It's like anger. How could this happen? How could God have let this person die? How could this happen? And I think that's the stage where a lot of us are at, people is at, where so angry at the politicians, the corporations, whoever we think is to blame. And so the stage off is letting go of the anger is the next stage. And then becomes a sort of, in death, it comes to bargaining, perhaps if I did this or that, but I think we're past that. It ultimately, the grieving process comes to, there's a depression side in the grieving cycle, which I think is what you're talking about. We get so depressed. And then through that, we come to acceptance. You know, we accept our loved one has gone, they're no longer with us, and life is not, you know, like it was, and there's an acceptance. And what I'm trying to do in the book is lead people towards that stage of the grieving process for humanity and the planet towards an acceptance of this is how things are. With that acceptance, if we can come out of the anger and the depression, I think we will be in a better position to take care of each other as we go through these changes. We're going to need all the help, community, emotional support that we can offer each other. Yeah. It may not change things, but it will help us navigate our way through these times with greater clarity, compassion, and open-heartedness without falling into anguish and despair so much.
You know, I think grieving is the key word. I mean, what is grieving? It's letting go. It's the art of letting go. And you know, whatever it is, whatever loss we might have, you know, you could grieve the loss of a small fortune if you make a bad investment. You could grieve the loss of people you know. And as we get older, and you and I are now in our 70s, you know, we are having more people die around us. We are having more opportunities to let go, to practice this hard grieving, because it's not easy, but maybe we're going to be getting better at it. Maybe that's our dharma for the rest of this lifetime, to get better at grieving and all that goes along with that. Like you say, all the different stages, ending up with compassion, you know, and letting go of the imagined future, letting go of the utopian dream, letting go of happily ever after. We have just been so conditioned by fairy tales, some of them of a religious nature. It's amazing how blind we are to reality. And I think that's what you're trying to do here, is help people wake up to reality. So even if AI is not going to come to the rescue and solve the whole problem, and I'm thinking of climate change. I mean, we have a lot more problems than that. But to me, climate change is like the one that's so big, and it seems like, from what everything I read, almost irreversible at this point. I hate to believe that, but yeah, wow. You talk about anger and somebody to blame. You know, I think there is some blame to go around. I mean, when you think of how the lawyers for the oil companies have denied the greenhouse effect for 50 years, just like the cigarette companies did.
Yeah. And I'm not saying they are not to blame for particular things that are happening. Like, you know, the cigarette companies are definitely to blame for the much higher incidence of lung cancer from smoking. They certainly bear responsibility. What I'm talking about is the overall situation. This overall situation we're coming to, of things going faster and faster, leading to collapse, is inevitable. We are not to blame for that. We are to blame for particular things that are happening, yes, and we should bear responsibility for that.
We also need to hold ourselves accountable for our own corruptibility. You know, I remember Al Gore's documentary, An Inconvenient Truth, and what a great title. You know, basically, what it means to me is that the average American would rather have the planet go down the tubes than be inconvenienced by having to switch to a different fuel source. And they're more worried about the price of gasoline than they are about their grandson's future. Anyway, I think that it's like George Carlin said, the average American has an IQ of 100 and most of them are dumber than that. And I don't know if you can blame people for being dumb. I think to some extent you can blame people for not paying attention, I suppose, but I guess there's no point in blaming in any case. But it's hard to not despise humanity. You're telling us to forgive humanity. It's great.
Yeah, I'm saying, in terms of how the overall situation we are in is inevitable. So that's where the forgiveness comes. It isn't like, oh, we'd be living in utopia if it weren't for this or this or this or this.
Right.
We may be living in a different dystopia, but we are moving into, you know, this particular dystopia, and there are people to blame for the form that this particular dystopia is taking. But we'd be moving in this direction anyway. That's what I see. And that's where the grief, you see, what grief leads to, you know, when you look at so many spiritual teachings, the grief leads to an open-heartedness. It may be painful for the heart, but what people say time and time again is through the grieving, they began to open their heart. And what so many spiritual teachings say is that's what we need is, you know, we need love, open-heartedness, compassion. That's what it comes back to. So maybe a silver lining in all this is that we can actually awaken more to that side of ourselves.
And maybe there is some karmic reward for this kind of evolution, this internal evolution. Like I wrote a paper about how reincarnation gives me a sense of hope and meaning, because to the extent that I'm compassionate and generous and forgiving and kind, I'm, you know, improving my stock with God. Maybe I can persuade her to, you know, send me to a different planet next time.
Worth a try.
You know, I just have to be a good person. No, okay. I mean, I can see how this is a psycho-spiritual awakening, which is what you call it. It's kind of hard for me to make that argument with my grandson.
I know. That again is a hard part of this. Is, you know, people with their grandchildren looking at the world their grandchildren are growing up into. It's hard. I mean, I know a lot of friends who really, you know, some people just not having children anymore because they just don't, you know, they can't see
right.
future being to bring children into. Oh. It's hard. It is hard, and it's going to get harder, and that's, you know, that's why we're going to need each other. But, you know, I believe by facing what is happening and seeing why it's happening can actually make it hopefully easier. May not be the right word, but help us navigate these times better with a more open heart and understanding, rather than fighting each other, fighting the situation isn't going to get us anywhere.
Right. Yeah. Well, I really appreciate that you wrote the book. I want to ask you about something. We've only got a couple of minutes. I watched you interview the AI version of Peter Russell. That was fascinating. I loved it. Give us the backstory on that.
That is fascinating, but again, because it comes back to, in a way, what we're talking about. This was a year ago. This is the early days of AI a year ago.
Right.
But it's fascinating. I made that a year ago when we were just beginning to get, you know, we moved from ChatGPT. We're going to get voice synthesis. I gave Claude, which is then was a new AI chatbot. Now everybody's using it. I gave it my whole book, Forgiving Humanity. And I said, write a script for a conversation between a reader and the author. 30 seconds later, I'm reading this script, saying things which I would not have thought of. It had a deeper perception of what the book was pointing towards than I did. It blew me away. And so then I took samples of my voice, and so I got these two different characters to read the script in two different voices. I then took samples of my face and got another AI to produce images, two different images of me, one the reader, one the author. And then I used another AI to animate the faces and speak the words and put it all together. And it's fascinating. I mean, now today, anybody can do that. A year ago, it took, you know, a bit of creativity. I saw this potential. And so a year ago, it was breakthrough. Today, it's mundane. Anybody can do this. That's fascinating. Yeah,
it's still good. I encourage the listeners to look it up on YouTube because it was fun to watch.
And just to say, there's a point here that because it came up with ideas I hadn't thought of, I now have my own chatbot on my website. And you can ask me, not me, but you're asking the chatbot. It has 170 of my books, essays, articles, tape recordings in it. It comes up with wiser answers than I would have done. And so this is why I see AI can also have the role of what I call augmented wisdom.
It right. can take oh, I love it.
Taking my work and is augmenting it. It's actually, funny enough, I am learning from it about my own teaching. It's weird. It's really weird, but I use it. You know, it blows me away how it comes up with better answers than I would have done. It's fascinating.
Very hopeful sign. And on that note, we pretty much have to sign off because we've run out of time. And I want to thank you, Peter, for being with us today. There's so much more we could explore, and maybe we will in another segment. But for today, we've run out of time. And I want to tell our listeners about your website before we go, which is peterrussell.com. Very simple, peterrussell.com. And for those who may have tuned in to Pathways late, this is your host, Paul O'Brien, author of Intuitive Intelligence, a book that shares the theme of Pathways, which is personal and cultural evolution. Now, don't worry, you can play and or share this interview whenever you want via the internet or as a free podcast, and I will tell you how in a minute. Today, we've been visiting with Peter Russell, author of Forgiving Humanity, How the Most Innovative Species Became the Most Dangerous. I want to say thank you to all of our listeners for tuning in to Pathways, which is broadcast and streamed on the internet at www.kboo.fm every Sunday morning at 8:30 USA Pacific Time. But even better, podcasts of today's show, which you can listen to and forward to others, are available for free at divination.com. That's spelled divination.com, as well as via iTunes, Paulo's YouTube channel, and other free podcast servers. This is Paul O'Brien reminding you to tell your friends about Pathways Radio and podcasts. And thanks again to Peter Russell and to all of you listeners for tuning in and being a part of the Pathways conversation.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM in the Portland area and all over the world at kboo.fm.
The month of June is Pride Month, an opportunity to shine a light on the vast heritage of lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, unquestioning, intersex,